Leaders in tech are burning out at an absurd rate. Control-Alt-Delete with Lisa Drury is a no-BS conversation with one of the top female executives who spent over 25 years in Silicon Valley. If you're suffering from the always-on, never-good-enough, will-replace-you-today machine called the tech space, this show's for you. Here's Lisa.
Hey, hey, everybody. It is time for a magical moment. This is magical, so magical. I want to ask you a question because this question is exactly why we're here today. And it's not a question I came up with. This is a question my guest came up with. And the question is this: are you settling? Are you settling? Imagine the power that comes from you asking yourself that question. So today I am thrilled to bring with you the author of a book called Results, which don't we all want in tech? Saida Zaidi is here with us, and I'm so happy you're here, Zaida. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Lisa. It's an absolute honor and a pleasure to be here with you.
Oh my gosh, look at my face. Like, you guys don't even know. I met Saida through a joint group we're in, and we are on a mission, right? We're on a mission to unlock heads and hearts at speed and scale. You know, for me, my tagline is about moments that matter, as well as high-performing teams and results, right? Getting kick-ass results. And look, the author of the book Results is with us today, so you don't even know how giddy I am. Let me tell you a little bit about her, because you guys really want to know this as we're having the conversation today. The thing that really stood out for me is the breadth and depth of what just your life has brought. So, excuse me, I'm so excited, I have to clear my throat. Saida Zaidi is not only a project director, she's a positive psychologist and a qualified architect. Now, when you're in tech and you're thinking about your tape outs, you're thinking about your next project scope and all of the project management that goes into this, let me tell you something, we got the right person to talk to you today. She's uniquely placed to share her results method, and it's full of practical, actionable steps to get it done. Now, for any of you who've listened to this podcast or heard me talk, you know, in these LinkedIn lives that I do, you can see we're sisters from another mother. I don't even know. Like, I'm just going to get out of the way, and I'm just going to ask all kinds of juicy questions that are going to help you right now with what's going on. Because the reality is, we all want results. And we want to feel good about them, and we want to be at our best. And there's nobody better poised than for me to interview today. So Zaida, thank you so much. Tell us at the highest level, what is results? How do you define results?
Thank you so much, and such an honor to be here, really. I think for me, the thing about results is, you know, we all want progress in our life, but I think what happens is that we make progress, but we don't enjoy it. For me, the ultimate result is when you're moving forward in your life in whatever way you want, but you're enjoying it, and your lived experience is one where you feel content, you feel alive. It's kind of like that thriving and that energy and all of that stuff. It's there. I'm not saying the obstacles and the challenges aren't there, because they will come. But it's just, you're able to keep going and to keep making the progress, and you just enjoy that experience that life can kind of offer to you. Oh,
I'm awestruck with your answer, because it's not a one step fits all. It's about the experience. So we're getting into feelings, people. We're going to feelings, right? So when I asked the question, are you settling? My own journey was, there was settling, and settling led to burnout. And what really helped me reboot was getting clear on what I now know as core desired feelings. And this is something I learned through the work of Daniel Laporte. And in tech, what I was doing so much was pushing my feelings away, even pushing feelings of settling away. I should be grateful I have this job. I should be grateful the pay is good. You know, other people are unemployed, whatever, right? There's, when I was started shooting on myself so much and suppressing my feelings, honestly, I never thought of it as settling at the time, but in reading the foreword on your book, I was settling. And I think that that's a really great place for us to start, as we look at so much going on in the world today and so many leaders in tech going into tech because they want to have an impact. They want to make a difference. They want technology to be good for the planet and humanity. And it's also a very big Achilles heel of settling for so many of us. Instead of connecting, we're doom scrolling, or instead of being with our family, it's one more email to write. I would love to hear your thoughts on settling. Like, I know the story is yours, so I don't want to tell your story, but happy to create the space for us to really unpack that a bit, because I think it's rampant and I don't know that it's labeled that. Mm. So I would just love to hear your thoughts on settling and thinking about it through the lens of people, you know, working hard for what they believe is the, you know, the good of things, and yet their soul's missing in the process.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Settling is something that I think we kind of do a little bit accidentally. And in the results book, I speak about four different types of settling.
Oh, so there's settling. Take notes. Yes.
Settling for nothing, settling for somebody else's agenda, and then settling for the very best. And for me, I mean, I'm not going to share the story because I want everyone to go ahead and buy the book.
Right, exactly. I love it. I missed it. I heard settling for nothing.
Settling for nothing. Okay. Settling for somebody else's agenda.
Yep.
Settling for mediocrity. Right?
Yep.
I know.
Oh, dude, you had me at mediocrity. Yep.
And then settling for the very best.
Yeah. Keep going. My mind is like, whoop. Yeah.
And that's the thing, right? Because like at some point we are going to settle for something, you know. It's like the story in the book is really about my son buying a pair of sneakers or trainers in the US when we were on a trip. And we all have that story where we've either bought something that was kind of okay, or we've taken on a job that was kind of the thing that we wanted. But we are not understanding what is the very best for us. And I think if I was to ever describe my mission in life, it would be that I want to encourage everyone to identify what is their very best. And then that is the thing you aim for. And if you want to say you're settling for something, 100% settle for the very best, because that's what you deserve. But I think we don't have this conversation. And certainly, when I was looking for it in the world of personal growth, positive psychology, and, you know, all of the different books that are out there, I couldn't find something that just pinpointed it like this.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there are times, and don't get me wrong, like, I'm not saying that you've got to settle for the very best in everything, because I think that is also impossible to do. So we have to be realistic. But the things that are important to you and significant to you, 100%, you've got to aim for the very best, because if you're not, you kind of do yourself a little bit of a disservice. And so the story in the book about my son and his sneakers, I mean, he's a teenager, right? For him, buying the right shoes is really important. And all I kind of pointed out to him was that if he bought ones that he wasn't happy with, he would be settling for something that he didn't really want in the long term.
I want to bring this settling conversation to my dinner table tonight. Like, this is so important. And I want to just drop a truth bomb here, because you said you're kind of, because you are so gracious and you make space for everybody. But I kind of want to look everybody in the eyes right now and say, no, you are. When you are not clear on your values and you are making decisions from just, you know, what's easiest, or don't rock the boat from a conflict standpoint, or what would other people think of me, you're doing your soul a disservice. You're doing the planet a disservice, because you are worthy of your desires, and you are worthy. Like, you're born worthy, people. And what happens is we forget that, and we try and turn ourselves into this mold of what we should be. And listen, I did it. I know I did it. And I believe that was settling, because fundamentally, when I did find my voice, and when I did stand strong in my values, I was able to move mountains. And other people were like, I mean, even getting budget, standing really clear on why it mattered to the business and why it mattered to me, I could get budget that way, versus, oh no, I'll just settle for, you know, the regular run rate, and it's just going to be what it is, and don't rock the boat. What in the world? Like, if you're working in a company that's supposed to be innovating, that means you know, you don't settle on what you know to be right for the business and for yourself. So Saida, I love that you're creating this conversation. And I really appreciate that it can even be something as a family to talk about at dinner. my daughter and I talk about this stuff all the time, but I've never used the word settling. I'll just say, are you sure you want it? But like, that's about a need, right? And that need might just be, I need something right now, versus settling would be, what is it you really want to feel and how are you going to get there? It's a whole different conversation. So I think you just upped my parenting game too. I'm so grateful. Yeah.
But it's amazing, right? Because everyone can understand it. Like the minute you explain it, you're just like, yeah. And I think you can even explain this concept to a four-year-old, because you can put it to them about a toy or a book that they want to read. And in fact, you know, we're in the process of converting the book into one for teenagers and then one for kids. And I was thinking, well, how do I explain settling to a four-year-old?
I love it.
Literally, it's going to be, does your parent choose the book that you read at nighttime, or do you pick it?
I love it. Yeah, you're really talking about finding your voice and like standing into your own power and advocating for what you know to be important for you. I mean, I deal so much with execs that are trying to, you know, balance the needs of shareholders, employees, you know, everything in between. And I think sometimes they feel like they don't have a right to a voice. And I say to myself, you're put into them, by the way, I'm not shy about it. You're in the leadership role. Your job is to have a voice. Like, you are the one who has to integrate all this and then advocate for what's right at the business level and for me, the people level too. So this settling concept, I want to hear all about it. So we've talked about the four types. I'd love to know I think I'm planting a seed here. It's kind of silly, but we'll just call it. Where do you see burnout most? In the four areas of settling, what's your experience and where does burnout show up the fastest and kind of have the most of dire effects on people?
Gosh, that's such a good question. I mean, you know, the three areas, in fact, you can even experience burnout when you're settling for the very best, because you're just pushing yourself so far. But I'm going to park that one for now.
Sure.
So settling for mediocrity, settling for somebody else's agenda, and settling for nothing. I think settling for nothing, there's really not much burnout there. I would probably say that's more about bore out, which I also speak in the book, because bore out is the opposite of burnout. You're not doing anything, but you've got all of this time and you start to feel anxiety and, you know, maybe even marginally depressed, and you kind of end up in that space for a little bit longer and perhaps end up needing kind of like an intervention or support or therapy. Mm-hmm. So coming back to the other two about settling for mediocrity or settling for somebody else's agenda, mediocrity, perhaps, you know, you kind of will know, but you might also not know because you've not done the work that's in the book. Mm-hmm. I think the place where most people experience burnout is when they settle for someone else's agenda. And I can say that because I've done it in the past, you know, like, don't think that I've written these pieces without having experienced all of them at some point.
Yeah, I should have said that. By the way, this is not an academic conversation. This is a real conversation. Yeah. Okay. So someone else's agenda, say more about what that looks like and how does that show up for people so they can start to identify it for themselves?
So you might be working in an organization and, you know, the organization, the CEO, the C-suite, they've all got a vision, there's a mission for the company, and you're just not aligned to it. Now, either you're not aligned to it because you've not seen how you can connect to it and you're just showing up for the job, or the values of that organization are actually different to your own. And when that happens, and here's the thing, right? Like, work is not what it used to be, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. There is no longer a 9-to-5. The expectation that emails are responded to almost immediately is there regardless of what anyone says. Mm-hmm. So if you're constantly having to be available, working on a job that you're not necessarily connected with at a visceral level, what do you think is going to happen? Of course, you're going to burn out, right? And you're going to burn out, not just because you're doing so much work, but you're going to burn out in here because you can't feel that connection. And I think that, you know, really, and this is a bit kind of radical, but it is also the truth. And I'm saying this to you because I want to save you from the experience that I've had in my life.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. You know,
if you start to feel that a job is not what you want, or you're starting to think, you know, this is taking over my whole life, then there's a message in there for you. And that could be burnout. It could be that you need to have a conversation with your manager, but you can't just ignore that, because when you ignore it and you kind of don't do anything about it for too long, the result of the burnout is that you're not in a position to operate for what can be months. We're not talking about days here. We're talking about months. And the recovery from that is very, very significant.
I'm just going to let that land for a second, because it's one thing to hear it, right? But you and I have both experienced it. And I think when I was going through it, people are like, I'm worried about you. I'm good. I have capacity. You know, I have energy like nobody's business. I can get it all done. There were plenty of people telling me they were worried about me. And I just really, that just sent me to like a shame spiral. That wasn't useful. I tell people that's not helpful.
Right? I mean, my line was, I thrive on stress, right?
Right. Oh yeah. I thrive on stress. I'm pressure prompted, right? I have capacity. All of this, like, that's not even like talking from your heart, by the way. We're all just talking buzz, you know, they call it bullshit bingo. Like, how many squares do you get? And that fundamentally, you know, I own my own business now, right? I love what I do. I love the results my clients are getting. I am so lit up by it. And I'm even more aware of the potential burnout, even though I love it, right? So talk about being connected to my own agenda. And my family matters, my health matters. And there's times when I forego that stuff. And then I remember, oh yeah, you were in the emergency room. You thought you were having a heart attack. You took 3 months off. Do you want to get there again? So I always have that like personal experience now to hang on to. But when I was in it and I couldn't see it, one of the things I recognized for myself, and you can tell me about someone else's agenda, because I think that's really important for us to double click on. I felt resentful and angry. I didn't feel the capacity to be more creative with solutions. I jumped straight into story. Oh, here we go again. Yeah, just shut up and do it, Lisa, right? I got very judgy, and I started to hide in meetings. I wouldn't go face-to-face to meetings, and like now on Zoom, I probably wouldn't even be on camera, but I used to go to a conference room away from everyone I worked for because I didn't want them to see my facial expressions, because I no longer had the capacity, which I used to brag about having capacity. I couldn't hide my face anymore. And what I mean by that is my facial expressions would really look at people like, are you effing kidding me? Oh, you know, even look at the head bob. I can like totally do it. And when it became someone else's agenda versus a joint agenda, or at least me being aligned, I can see that now because I've had that experience. You know, what was your experience and how did it show up for you? So people can really get a sense of it versus, you know, you seem stressed. I thrive on stress. Like, what was your own, looking back, how did you show up and how did you feel?
Yeah, I mean, my biggest kind of experience of burnout was when I was a director in local government. You know, I had a project of $500 million. That was about 10 years ago. So I have no idea what that would equate to today. I set up a whole team, consultants, resources, everything. We were bidding for funding. Funding got approved. You know, the entire procurement kind of process was set up. And then the government changed, our funding got cut. And so all of these people that I had brought in, I now had the responsibility for essentially getting them back to their previous jobs or supporting them to get something new, laying off all of the consultants and the external advisors and things. And it was horrendous. I mean, it was just so much responsibility. What was I doing? Like, you know, I'd show up to meetings. I would come home, sort the kids out, because my kids were quite young at the time. And then I'd be working again until 10, 11 o'clock at night, but getting up and leaving at 6:30 in the morning. Like, it's just not sustainable. You know? Going on holiday and having, in the days when we had Blackberries, having my Blackberry there just with the red light constantly pinging.
Yep.
And it was really not a good experience. I kind of knew that I was burning out because I'd lost any semblance of self-care that I had. Mm-hmm. And as I'm describing it, I can just remember we kind of went on a caravan holiday in Norfolk, which is maybe a couple of hours drive away. And, you know, the kids are on the beach and I'm there with my BlackBerry. And I just thought, you know, this is not right.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's just when you're on holiday, you should be away from it because you know that other people are able to look after it. But when the other people are also stressed about their jobs because they don't have any sense of security anymore, it's not good. And so in that time, what I did, and you know, I think some of this comes from, you know, I am the oldest of four girls. I always had that sense of responsibility. I wanted to make sure that everyone was as safe as they could be in terms of taking their next steps. And as soon as that happened, and I had that space to just kind of like take a pause, I thought, okay, I'm done. And I was done in a number of different ways. I think I felt burnt out, although it took me another 5 or 6 years to even acknowledge that was happening at that time.
Yep.
And I also knew I just needed to do something different. So that was when I made the transition into, I kind of quit my role and set myself up as a certified business coach, did all the training and really have been doing my, I suppose, leadership development and work in that field ever since.
It's so interesting to hear your story because there's so much I can relate to myself and I see with my clients every day. And the word responsibility, I think I really want to double click on that. So you might be burning out if you feel like everything's on your shoulders. You know, you might be burning out if you're not delegating anymore because you can see your team is maxed out. Like that's an indicator you're probably maxed out too. You might be burning out when you're on holiday and, you know, work still calls you, right? It took me so long in my career. Honestly, when I took my first, my medical leave, I say first, like I had, you know, I did have a baby that was a medical leave, but that's not what I'm talking about. When I took the one for burnout, I still worked for like, I don't know, 2 weeks. And my husband called my doctor and said, I can't get her off the damn phone. Like, what do I do? Because this isn't working. And the doctor had another meeting with me and said, last chance, I'm not going to support you if you're not going to be responsible for yourself. I mean, it's so sad and so true for so many because I felt like people might judge me if I actually broke. And my husband took me to the store at the mall, got me my own personal cell phone because I was always responsible. Well, he used one phone for both, took my work phone and he hid it from me. That's how this started. And then I had my personal phone and all I wanted to do was text everyone at work and go, here, shh, like sneaking like the teenager, you know, when you shouldn't be on the phone. And I thought, wait a minute. At some point, it's not sustainable, right? Your messaging is just so spot on. And so for those listening, listen, I'm not just going to make you feel like, oh, I might be here. I want to talk about what you can do and what does work. And so I'd love for you to just share some tips. I mean, I love practical, actionable, real-time things to get it done so that they're not ruling out a heart attack or they don't feel like they just have to quit tomorrow and, you know, drop off the face of the earth. What advice and guidance do you give the people you coach, your readers of your book, and those that you interact with? What can people do today to help with this?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing really is to acknowledge that there is a problem, a challenge, something that needs to be worked on. And it was really interesting listening to you speaking there, Lisa, because I'm thinking, you know, what you're describing really is addiction. And If you're addicted to your work, it's hard to face that as the truth. But I know for me, despite, you know, being married, having kids, all of the trappings of external success, I was starting to feel miserable because I was addicted to my work, right? And it's horrendous to have to face that as a reality, but it is the reality. It's the truth. And if you feel like that, then I think there are a few things that you can do. One, I'm going to make a book recommendation, and that's called Recovery by Russell Brand. It's brilliant.
Oh my gosh, Russell Brand. You had me at Russell Brand, right? Yeah. Okay. Yep.
And, you know, I bought the book. I also got the Audible. My recommendation is just listen to the Audible because he reads it himself. It's really, really engaging. Go for a walk. And that book will land. It will help you to understand what is going on for you because of the way that he has written it in that he talks about addiction as being not just about drugs or food or sex or anything like that. You can be addicted to anything. And so it's interesting even just unpacking this with you here, because I'm thinking, well, you know, one of the biggest challenges we do face is that we get addicted to things that we think are good for us, you know. Right. And mm-hmm. I would say that you put measures in place to help you, so by other people identifying when your kind of boundaries are being broken, because sometimes we are not the ones that can see our behavior. And mm-hmm. I can tell you in that when I'm on a roll with my exercise, sometimes I will be exercising every day because I think I'm being smart or I'm doing a streak or something like that. And then it gets to that place where it starts to become addictive. I know this about my personality. And so what I've done is I've said to my husband, if you see me doing these behaviors, you need to tell me to stop, and not just kind of like a gentle say, Ida, this isn't good, mm-hmm. but you need to kind of like pull me aside and say to me, this is what's going on and you're damaging yourself. Mm. I've given him the permission to be yeah. that directive.
Yeah, the permission slip is important, isn't it?
You know, and I think you know who that person is for you that you can kind of give that permission to and ask them for help. Because if you don't do it, they're going to be seeing your behavior and they're going to be thinking, how do I say anything? Like, I don't know.
100%. Yeah, you have to make it safe, right? I mean, that's what I tell leaders all the time. Even just if you want feedback and you want a real relationship, you need to say, I'm working on not giving all the answers. If I start to talk too much, you know, call me on it. It's very similar to what you're saying right here.
Yeah,
can I lean into that for a second? Because one of the things that I wasn't open to was feedback or ideas. And what you're saying, if I had known it back then, I would have found someone. Here's what I would have done. And what I'm going to do tonight, I would have given them a note to hand me. Because what happens for me when I'm in, we'll call it addiction, work addiction. By the way, I don't know if I've ever brought this up on my podcast before, but coming from an alcoholic family history, I've done a lot of work on codependency. I've done a lot of therapy, you know, adult children of alcoholics and all this stuff to learn and educate myself. And there is a strong correlation in some of the family imprints around addiction, especially when it's socially acceptable to be thriving at work. So I'm just going to like let that be parked, but own it enough that if someone wants a conversation about it, they can talk to me. But I would, well, here's where I was going. I would like to hand them a note. It's like a note to your future self. Hey, Lisa, you're doing it again. And I know you want this message, right? So it's from me to you. The person can hand it to you, because I got to tell you, whenever my husband tried, resentment and judgment, that's not good for my marriage. But what would be good is if I had a really pretty note that I took the time to decorate and it was filled with love, and he would just put it in my hands, kiss me on the forehead and walk away. Then I'd be like, oh, there it is. So I would offer that as something too, right? To love yourself enough to write your future self to give yourself a note, because I didn't give permission slips to anybody to give me feedback. As a matter of fact, I barked more and made them go away because I received that as a message of failure, not a message of love.
Yeah, or you receive it as a threat and you think, well, actually the other person wants my job if it's a scenario at work.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Why are they trying to undermine me? What's going yes. on here? You know, there's so many different ways that you
politics
can
attack and backstabbing and all that. Like, yeah, oh, 100%. But I'm actually, so glad you said that.
Yeah, if you've got your people who are the advocate for you and who are your support, right? Yeah. And you know who they are, and they're going to be few and far between, but you just identify them and say, look, if this ever happens in the future, if I ask mm-hmm. you, all you have to do is just let me know. Mm-hmm. And it's just so empowering, because I think this is the way that we get better. I remember one of the first things that I did as I started my career in local government is the work that my boss would give me, I would do maybe in half a day. And I'd say, I'd be hungry for work. I'd be saying to him, what can I do? What can I do? Can you give me more? Can you send me here? Or can you do this? And I think he got a bit irritated. Right? But do you know what was really magical about that is that I said to him, you know, I want you to tell me how I can be better. I don't want to have to work this out by myself. If you don't tell me, then it's a much longer journey for me. Mm. And he understood it. And I would say that message from 20 years ago is still relevant today. Mm-hmm. And you can use it with anyone, with your work colleagues, with your boss, with your friends. I'm going to ask you afterwards, right?
Yeah.
How can I be better? Because mm-hmm. if I don't ask that question, I stay where I am. And the whole message of the results method is about making progress. It's not just about making progress with projects. Of course, that's critical, mm-hmm. but it's also about you as an individual making progress in terms of your psychology, the things that you enjoy, and going back to that daily experience of life. You know the answers to that question by asking people for feedback.
Yes. I want to say amen. I mean, yes, if nothing else happens today, we could give you all kinds of tips like drink water, walk more, meditate, blah, blah, blah. But the magic that just got shared right now by Saida, I really want to just restate what I heard so everyone can just like soak it in. And that's being open to feedback, number one. But prior to that, inviting the safe people that you trust in to make it okay to give you the feedback. I actually, there was a time in my career where I was really looking for words of affirmation and I was really looking for some pats on the back because I wasn't getting them at work. And I was in a meeting with a bunch of people and I said to them, aren't we doing great? You guys, isn't everything awesome? I was running a huge sales conference at the time. And the one woman who I trust more than anyone said, well, I think there's some things we could do better. Something like this, right, Saida? And oh my gosh, do you know what just happened? I sat there and I wanted to laser beam her to death and make it stop. I wanted my fix. So I'm like, this might've been addiction. Like, I'm just thinking about all of this, right? And in the moment I said, you know, I think I asked the wrong question because what you just did was answer the question I asked. What I was really looking for was I wanted to celebrate our successes and not focus on what's not working. I think I want to circle back on this, right? And so we broke the meeting. I took a walk and I realized that was a compelling moment in our relationship and in front of all of this team that I was leading, how she and I handled it. So she got a bunch of, oh my gosh, how can I protect you from Lisa? You're now going to be on the shit list, right? And I got a bunch of, how disrespectful for her to like go against you, blah, blah, blah. And so I talked to her and we regrouped in front of everyone. And on the side, she said, no, she trusts me. She wants me to tell her the truth. And on the side, I said, no, I trust her. I want her to tell the truth. And that changed the dynamic of everything. So back to your, is there someone at work who can give it to you? You might even do it horribly wrong like I did, because isn't the power in the question? The question is what brings you down that path. So had I asked a question like, what do you want to celebrate? I probably would have got my fix, but I said, isn't it great? Well, clearly not everything's working. So yeah, I'm just processing real time with you as an extroverted thinker. This is what happens with me. So I want to take it back to what you said. And that is really about, we started with someone else's agenda and settling, and we were really just kind of double clicking on some actionable things. And what you just said is magical. Give people permission to tell you and be open to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And just one other thing that's coming up for me as well is that, you know, in the book, I share with you how you can understand yourself better. So in terms of the results method, the second piece is about you evolving into your best self. And there's a number of different elements in there in terms of knowing your values, your strengths, your communication style, and any kind of psychometric assessments that you've done. And just a kind of little sidetrack, I love it. Before I as I put the book together, I did a beta test. So I did a beta test with individuals and with one organization and took them all through the results method to make sure that any nuances or any adjustments that needed to be made could be before it was published. And so this isn't just science backed. It also has been tested with a group. Now, coming back to the thing that I was going to say is that I recommend that everybody knows their love language. And that is work done by Gary Chapman, I think. Yep. Chapman, Coleman?
I think it's Chapman. Yeah.
It is Chapman, right? Mm-hmm. I'm dyslexic with names, so forgive me. And I would recommend that everyone gets that. And actually, there's even work that's been done on the love languages for work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because when you know that, you're able to communicate better. Right. And mm-hmm. this is more than just kind of like, you know, do I like gifts? Do I like time? This is about how do you use the words of affirmation? How do you actually communicate with somebody? And that's particularly why I chose this as the piece in terms of kind of really leaning into your communication style mm-hmm. and making sure that you know what your love language is. Because when you know, when you share it with others, it's magic.
I completely agree with you. Yeah. And it's interesting to me too, in the sense of words of affirmation, that doesn't necessarily mean, Lisa, you're awesome. You know, but it does mean that I do appreciate feedback on things I do well. And it also honestly does indicate that I'm open to feedback, even if not, if it can be presented in a way that it can be heard. Like, I just came up with my own little note to myself, right? Some people who like gifts, that doesn't necessarily mean I want a bonus all the time. That could mean I want the gift of time or the gift of your presence, the gift of your knowledge, right? And so it's really about, for me, when I got exposed to the love languages, and I think it's called Appreciation at Work, is the book that we're kind of leaning toward. I was trying to see if I had my copy because I keep it around with my clients. One of the things that really stood out for me with this is that my definition of it isn't yours. There's a framework, but without that conversation, you could still be making assumptions, right? And what was beautiful for me in the example I shared, when I look back at it, I mean, this was like 15, 20 years ago, honestly. We are still, this woman ended up working with me almost 18 years. Like, she never left because we had that trust and we found a way to have that conversation. And she knew to leave me a note once in a while and said, you kicked ass in that presentation, or, you know, how does it feel to, you know, be done with that amazing project you led? Just the smallest little things, right? It's not like she had to go hire a plane and like put it up in the sky. But yeah, if you want to deepen your relationships, if you want to increase your capacity for true, honest to goodness connection at work, first you got to connect with yourself, and then you got to figure out who to connect with. And I love that you double clicked on that so much. What is your love language?
My love language is acts of service and time.
Acts of service.
Mm-hmm. And it's so funny because I've done this exercise with my work colleagues. I've done it in work, and I've done it with my family. And again, you know, speaking about my son, like, he's somebody that really likes gifts. And I never kind of understood it until we did this. And once I understood that his primary love language is gifts, I kind of thought, okay, now I know how to praise him. Like, I can use words, but the words won't land. But just a tiny little gift, a tiny little something, will be so much more meaningful to him. And bear in mind, like, he's a teenage boy. So it's quite, you know, he's just kind of like a different creature in some ways because of the age that he's in. Mm-hmm. And so he did something really, really amazing a few weeks ago. And I thought, okay, what can I get him? I asked him, and there was a bottle of aftershave that he wanted. And I was like, sure, I ordered it. See, when it came in the post, like, I was in a meeting, and he opened the door and I was like, you need to leave because I'm in a meeting. But afterwards he came and he just gave me such a big hug. Mm-hmm. And as a mom, to receive that from a teenage boy who really does not do that kind of contact, yep, is a demonstration of the power of understanding somebody's love language.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And for leaders, I talk about this so much too. When you have someone who doesn't appreciate, who wants quality time, but you want to recognize them at the sales conference on stage and put them up in front of 6,000 people and make them talk, that doesn't motivate or connect you, right? And I had someone on my team who hated getting up, and I always wanted to say thank you and this big, because I like the words of affirmation. So I don't care how big your group is. Yes, I appreciate that. And for me to like put my own needs aside and meet her where she was, just as your example with your son, when I took her to lunch and I said what I needed to say, and then I brought a note from the senior vice president, you know, congratulating her on what job well done, sky's the limit. That was like, oh, you met me with what I care about. That's what mattered to me. And so when you think about leadership and your role and your people burning out, here's another practical thing you could do. Have the conversation, take the quiz, and go figure out not only your love language, you know, the way you like to be appreciated, but also for your team. Because honestly, isn't burnout also when you're not feeling valued, right? And you're settling for someone else's agenda. So if someone thinks they're giving you all the awesome praise, you know, you're getting promoted, getting more money, and all you want is quality time to have a really meaningful conversation about this one project, you're just two ships that pass. That can lead to burnout.
And you described me perfectly, right?
And
because here's the thing, right? Like, my love language is time. So when people are praising me or saying wonderful things about me, like, I mean, you know, the facts are the facts. I cannot deny it. Right. But it just kind of goes off me like Teflon. Like I don't accept the words that are being said, because that is not my area that I want to lean into. Mm-hmm. But if someone then says, look, you know, here's et cetera, et cetera, and so we're giving you some time to work on this project that you might want to do or something, it's just so much deeper, you know. Mm-hmm. Even with presents, it's so funny. It was my birthday a few days ago and everyone's panicking about what to buy me because I'm just so not a gift person, right?
Yeah.
And but when someone comes and meets you where you are, mm-hmm. it's just incredible for their self-confidence, but also for you in terms of you feeling that you are an important part of their life, especially in the workplace, right? Relationships are so critical and they are two-sided. When you give, you are also receiving.
Yeah.
But if you don't feel like you're receiving or your gift is not accepted, then that, it doesn't just lead to burnout. It can also lead to unnecessary conflict.
Oh, totally. 100%. I just had like this, I don't know, for those of you listening, when you're talking with someone who you just completely, you know, have this open, safe space to talk, all this divine download show up, right? So the back of my hair just stood up. And I was thinking, if I had gotten the words of affirmation, whatever that was, more regularly, would I have worked so hard, or would I have felt good enough? Like if someone's love, I'll just speak for myself, love language of words of affirmation, which is praise and recognition. It's about significance. Like fundamentally, when you look at StrengthsFinder, it's about significance, right? It's about having an impact, making things better, doing, you know, innovating, you know, leading strong teams, whatever. But if all you ever hear is what's wrong or what's broken, it's demoralizing. It's not helpful, right? That's what I can say. It's not helpful. And then what it does do is it absolutely can lead someone who's wired the way I am to try even harder and get the same damn results. And then you think, well, this job sucks. You know, this company sucks, blah, blah, blah. You know, these shareholders are just up my ass all the time. No. You got to figure out how to get what you need and create the opportunity for the conversation to be differently, which is, thank you for that bonus. I'd love to know, in your own words, why you gave me that. That's a ninja trick to get words of affirmation, right? Thank you for this bonus. I'm super curious, what, in your own words, why am I getting this? Because so many managers are like, great job. Here's your bonus. No. I learned a long time ago. I better ask. So sometimes if you're like me, asking, and then, so if someone wanted to give you what you needed, and let's say you're not getting it, so you just keep trying to get that need fixed, what would advice be for someone who values acts of service and time? How could a leader how could you advocate for yourself? Because really that's how we get there, right? It's not just the leader reading your mind. It's what can you do? What tips for people that are wired that way do you have, Saida?
I mean, I think it all comes down to you saying to your team and your boss or your manager, whoever it is, mm-hmm. you know, look, at the end of the day, you all want me to be more effective. In order for me to be more effective, this is how I like to operate. Open that conversation up with your whole team if you can. Yeah, yep. It's going to be hard. You're going to feel very vulnerable. It's going to, you know, it might even be a bit crazy. But I guarantee when you do something like that and everyone in your team starts to understand each other and they understand you, mm-hmm. that intervention that you do, you'll be remembered for that. Because you change the culture and the dynamic of your team in a way that people, they just feel more at home at work. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. They're enjoying it so much more. And we all know when you enjoy your work, you will go all in, right? Yes. But you'll also then be able to create a very clear demarcation where your work is work because you value yourself. And then kind of go and do whatever it is that you want to do in the other time, mm-hmm. because you're showing up for yourself as you're working.
Yeah. Yeah. And it goes back to settling. I love this so much. So when we were talking about settling, at one point I was just settling for not getting what I needed to be my best or to actually even know, even your boss, when you're like, give me more. And they're like, wait a minute, right? That's all settling for the situation. So to step into the situation, look at it for what it is and go, I have a need that's not being met. And I'm going to own that. It doesn't mean I'm weak. It means I'm human, because we're all wired, right, to feel worthy and loved and connected and appreciated. We want that. This is our soul's yearning. And so I don't say don't settle, but if you find you're settling, I invite you to think about how could you make this need known in a way that's highest and best for the organization, yourself, and your people, right? You don't have to say, well, I'm not getting my needs met, because listen, no leader wants to hear that. But you're the CEO and the board is just up your butt all the time. You could literally say, well, let's celebrate first and then let's get into the tough stuff. I talk about raising your energy, right? When you start off a celebration, you're raising it. So you can own the meeting agenda. You can advocate for that. And you can just blame it on science if you need to. We're more innovative when we feel connected. We can feel more connected when we celebrate first. Then we can tackle the tough stuff. So that's practical and actionable, and you can do it today. So I just love it, Saida. I love this so much. Yeah. What did you want to say about that?
I was going to say, I'd actually plan this, right? Because I know that yes. When I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, how did I do it when I was at work? Yeah. I used to plan those difficult conversations and mm-hmm. those things. Well, this is what I want my outcome to be, working back from it and then thinking, how do I navigate my way through that meeting so that everybody that is at the table who may not agree with me ends up at least kind of understanding what I'm trying to do or mm-hmm. becoming a strong advocate for it? Because when yeah. that happens, your job is just so much easier.
I totally agree. I mean, I skipped that part. It's funny because I teach influence and communication skills, right? I run workshops. It's pulled through in every conversation. And if you don't have a strategy and a fallback plan, you're not doing yourself or your team any good. So I love that you brought that up, because it's almost like air to me, but to articulate it is so important. I'm going to remember to say that more, because yeah, that piece is critical. Yeah, you got to have the plan. Let me ask you this, right? So one of the things when I look at your process, you have the words intention, identity, and integrity. Articulate your desires based on your intention, identity, and integrity. And I feel like that's a good tie into what we just said. So I'd love to know, I'd love to just open that up for a conversation, because we're talking about burnout. And if you have desires and you're not articulating them and you're not clear on intention, your identity, and integrity, I think that there might be a practical, actionable step in here for our listeners too. But I'm guessing, just because of who I know you to be. So I'd love to just give you the floor and, you know, give us some insight there.
So what you're describing is something called the results GPS, and it's the goal positioning system. And it relates to your intention, your identity, your integrity, and your implementation. And I think these four pieces are absolutely necessary. You take one of them out, chances are that's the reason why you've not made progress previously on your project or your dream or your desire. Okay. Now, intention is absolutely critical, because we all have an intention for doing something. It's just when you articulate it, whether it's on paper or saying it out loud, your awareness of that increases, and then you know why you're doing something rather than just allowing that to happen accidentally. And that's why the piece on intention is so important. Identity, of course, you know, like, how do you want to show up? Is the work that you're doing part of who you want to be? There needs to be a link with that. You know, like when I was working as a project manager in local government, I knew why I was doing that. That role was part of who I was, because I wanted to have an impact on the services that we were providing to the young people in terms of improving their education prospects. Mm-hmm. Integrity, I mean, that's such an insignificant piece, in that, you know, all the conversation that we've been having about, you know, kind of working on projects and settling and things, if something is in integrity with you, you know it. Right? Mm-hmm. Immediately, you know it. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. But a lot of times we are doing things that are not in integrity with who we are, and we're silencing that voice. And the way that I describe it is that sometimes you might be in a meeting, you might be anywhere, and you just kind of go, ugh. And that noise needs to be paid attention to. Because that's the piece that's saying to you, maybe you're not in integrity. Maybe there's a message. Maybe there's just some work that you need to do to work out what is your truth in this particular situation. And then lastly, of course, the implementation piece in some ways is very obvious in that you can set up your plans and the work that you're doing. And if you don't follow through on it, really, what is it apart from a lovely story that you've concocted for yourself?
Right. Yeah. We are about results, aren't we? Yes. Oh, wait, that's the title of your book. Oopsie.
Yeah. Funny that. And this GPS, it kind of keeps you oriented through every single phase of the results method. So in terms of reaching beyond, evolving into your best self, selecting the right projects, utilizing your time, leading in the three environments, thriving, and then also succeeding. Mm-hmm. Always come back to this piece about the results GPS so you can check in with yourself. Like, I mean, a very simple example, you know, my identity today is going to be slightly different from what it is tomorrow. Mm-hmm. If I don't check in with that, then I'm missing something, because there's always new knowledge that you can gain about who you are. And when you're open to that, that's how the quality of your life improves.
So you're saying GPS, goal processing?
Goal positioning system.
Goal positioning system, right? Okay. You want the promotion. You want the promotion. Why do you want the promotion? Is it because you want bigger impact, more power, the title? You want your parents to be proud? You want the money because you're in debt? Like, why do you want the promotion? And listen, this is so for everybody. I don't care where you are in the process, right? So if you have a goal positioning system and you're looking at intention, identity, integrity, and implementation, walk me through, because so many people want the promotion and then they get there and they're miserable.
I'm going to give you a case study.
Get out, we have a case study. And we didn't plan this, people. This is all real time, right? This is just divine.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the case study is me, right?
Yep.
There I am, like, it must have been about 12 years ago. And I always have this view that if you're in a job for more than 3 years and you're not learning or growing, it's time for you to move on. And I knew it was time for me to move on, but I couldn't find anything. And then I saw a job which was basically two grades higher than me, and it involved a 50% salary increase. Now, when you work in the government, that's kind of like crazy to even think that you're going to go for a job like that. I asked a few people. They essentially told me that I was just, I was insane, just to kind of get my head down and carry on doing the job that I was doing. Mm-hmm. But I asked a friend and she said, get a coach. And so I worked with a coach for a number of different months. And guess what? I managed to get that job. And what's really interesting is that the pieces that we worked on, and I didn't even know about this kind of like goal positioning system at that time. Yeah. I didn't even know what coaching was. It was my first experience of coaching. And it was just, it was transformational. But when I look back at that time and I unpack it, what was I doing? I was saying that my intention was that I wanted to continue learning and growing. I wanted to do a job that, you know, really kind of stretched me and pushed me, that I thought somewhere I might be capable of, but I wasn't sure. Mm-hmm. I saw that role as part of my identity. I mean, gosh, of course, when I turned up on day one, I was like, what on earth have I done? Like,
of course, yeah. Learning curve. Yeah.
But the point was that I knew that that's the thing that I wanted, right? Mm-hmm. And then in terms of integrity, like, I'm not going to apply for something that I just knew was so beyond me that I would not be capable. Mm-hmm. I had to pause and look at the skill set and think, well, you know, if I get this job, what is my learning plan going to be? How am I going to prepare? What are going to be my first 100 days? All of those things. And then the piece on the implementation. You know, I didn't do my homework and leave it. I actually did that thing that my friend said, which was I got a coach and I did the work. And that's how I got that job. So if you're there and you've got you see a promotion, or there's a job that you want, or you want to even start a new business, whatever it is that you want to do, go through these steps, because it will really help you to create a plan that is solid for you to make that next move. And here's the other thing, right? Mm-hmm. If you make that plan and you don't feel it's solid, you then identify the gaps and where you need to do the work. the other option as well is that you kind of may go through this and think, well, actually, that job is not for me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not sitting in a place of uncertainty and wondering, or you're not settling, right? You're not kind of, and this is beautiful because it just brings the whole conversation back to the beginning, in that you're not in that space where you're just kind of being untrue to yourself. You're always operating from a place of integrity. And that's why I think this thing is so important. So, you know, if you've got a job in, or if you've identified something that you want to do, take it through these steps, because me getting that job was a miracle. I mean, it really, really felt like one.
Mm-hmm.
But that miracle happened because I did the work.
Yes. I love this case study so much for what we're talking about. And if I may, one perspective that I'll add, because everything you've said, I'm nodding. Whoever's watching the video of this is probably going to get motion sickness because I'm nodding so much. I mean, by the way, we didn't prep this conversation, everybody. This is the natural flow of this dynamic exchange, right? One thing I would say is, if you have a history of getting what you want and not being happy, run, don't walk, right? And one of the ways before I knew about this process that Saida's talking about is I started to turn it upside down and figure out, what feeling am I chasing? Because I was so disconnected. I was so externally focused that when I started asking myself, how do I want to feel when I get there? So when I was coming back from medical leave, I wrote down, how do I want to feel? Connected, healthy, balanced, proud, right? Impactful, all these things. And my coach at the time, so at that time I had a coach and a therapist because I was doing everything, trying to like integrate all parts. And it was like, okay, how is that? What's that going to look like? I'm like, well, that's a walking one-on-one. That's not sitting at my desk. You know, that's being honest about, it was scary and I'm so glad I'm back, right? So I really wanted to come back and be the better version of me. And I wanted to help other people see that. Honestly, it's why I do what I do now. And so talking about intention, even coming back from a medical leave, is your intention to hide and just hope it goes away, or to be authentic so other people can learn about what this is and why it happened and who you are and where you need help? There's just so much here to unpack. We could do like 7 episodes. So intention, identity, integrity, implementation, with a sprinkle of, what feelings are you chasing? Which I think goes back to intention. If I were to tie it to anything, and then the values ties to identity, and then integrity talks about, you know, being authentic and being true to yourself and your word and who you are. And then implementation is about being responsible, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Right? Taking ownership.
Yeah, if I can just add to something to what you just said, because it's perfect what you said in terms of feelings. I mean, I know for me, there have been times in my life where I've blocked my feelings related to work.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also something about listening to that, because that is kind of like a pre-burnout message to say, right?
Yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh, there it is. Yep. Say it again.
Woo. You know what I mean? And it's like you're stopping yourself from feeling because you've just got so much to do, mm-hmm. and you're just kind of like going through the motions. That is not something I would wish upon anyone. If you are feeling like you're not feeling anything, or you're blocking it off, please, I implore you, get the help that you need, because it is not sustainable.
Yeah. I used to say, if you find yourself coping through food, right? People always say, I'll sleep when I'm dead. And I just think, oh gosh, you're not sleeping when you're dead. It's a whole conversation. Sleep is restorative, right? We are not in the widget building age. We need restorative cycles to actually be innovative and our best and be contained enough so that if we do feel rage or sadness or anger or disconnection, we can actually do something about it in a way that's productive. But yeah, I did not feel.
It's one of the biggest challenges. In fact, I actually quote it in the results book. Mm. The World Health Organization said that lack of sleep or sleep deprivation is a global pandemic. Right. Mm. I mean, here we are, you know, in a period of the pandemic related to corona, and that is right front and center. Why have we ignored the other one? Right. Sleep is such an easy thing to resolve. And if you're not getting enough sleep, all the science shows that your decision making, your ability to kind of be focused, all of that is affected.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. If we were to draw the pyramid of burnout, I would say lack of sleep is at the foundation of most of my own personal experience, as well as those that I've, you know, had the pleasure of supporting in their reboot, hence Control Alt Delete. So yes, sleep. Oh my gosh, Saida, I have two questions, and we'll have to talk again. I'd love to know something, you know, a fun fact about you that people don't know. Like what can we learn that's so not public on your website or, you know, your LinkedIn profile? Tell us a fun fact about you.
Gosh, and you didn't even prime me or let me know you were going to ask me.
No, I know. Well, I saw you, you know, in pictures with all these amazing people. So clearly you're running with the cool kids, right?
Well, I'm trying.
The change makers. Yeah.
So a fun fact about me is I worked as an architect. And one of the things that I worked on was the 5-star UEFA accommodation for Celtic Football Club or Celtic Soccer Club in Glasgow. And, you know, I was in my late 20s at the time. It was just such a brilliant project to work on. So I used to design football stadiums when I worked as an architect.
Wow. That is, I mean, I think of the complexities of what that is. There's so much here. Yeah, when I lived in the Bay Area, they had built the new 49er stadium and they didn't factor in where the sun was. And so the home team was always the sun. Look at your face, right? You can think of it was always glaring. So then they moved the locker room, but all the fans who had season tickets and we were loyal fans sitting there, you know, I think that was a piece missed, right? Now they tried to rectify it, of course, and the world has changed again, but I even think about people taping out their computer chips. Like you don't want to miss that, right? So the complexity of what you just shared, you guys, think about this fun fact and how this applies to the book she's written. I mean, I just can't wait for everyone to get their hands on it. Okay, so last question. One of the things that I'm really very keen on is bringing music into the reboot of your soul. I believe music plays a part in joy, and it actually helps connect us to our innovative minds and to our bodies. So I'm building a playlist and I'd love to know a song that you listen to when you're trying to either elevate your energy, tap into, you know, the best version of you. Like what's your go-to song?
So the song that I'm going to share is the one that I listen to kind of like when I'm in a phase of just feeling a little bit fed up or not sure. And it's the thing that moves me, I suppose, to being a little bit more motivated. Mm. And it's Dua Lipa's Don't Stop Now. I love the lyrics in it. I mean, she's just very much kind of like, don't mess with me.
Uh-huh. I'm on a mission, right?
It's a kind of reminder for me not to mess with me, but also for the rest of the world not to mess with me, if that makes sense.
Oh my gosh, I love it. I can hear it in my head right now. All right, I can't wait for my playlist to come out. And thank you for contributing that. How can people find you more? I mean, I have the luxury of spending time with you in this beautiful group called Exchange, where we help people, you know, connect heads and hearts at speed and scale and unlock, you know, the real connection. And we've had so much fun getting to know each other for, I'd say, 4 to 6 months, depending upon how we look at our timeframes. So obviously, if you're in Exchange, you want to check out Saida. But for those that aren't in that group, how can they best find you and, you know, get your book and know more about all the awesome things you're up to?
So I'm going to pause for a moment. I will answer your question, but I think that I would like to just take a second to acknowledge this incredible community that John Berghoff has created. I mean, like him and his team have just made something that I cannot even describe. It's just so amazing. You learn so much. You feel at home. You're welcome. It's a fun experience of learning. I've never seen anything like this anywhere. So for me, it's a gift being in that community, and it's also a gift meeting fellow Exchange members like yourself, Lisa.
Thank you for pausing on that. And I will add to that that I feel like, I've sent so many clients and peers to Exchange to get to know more. So while I don't, you know, want to belittle your point or belabor your point, right, and like go on and on about it, I do want to pause for a moment because one of the things I know about being in integrity is really speaking your truth about things, and Exchanges is like nothing I've ever experienced before. And it has absolutely not only helped me as a business leader, but as a mom, a sister, a daughter, a friend, a trusted advisor. And yes, meeting people like you in that group and welcoming anyone who comes that way is fab. So let's just give John and team a plug there, right? I mean, because it is magical and you don't find that very often. And I'm very grateful for it too. Yeah.
100%. So if people, and actually you can read my little paragraph that I've written to John in my acknowledgements, because for me, even the writing of this book is testimony to that community, because that was where I was able to unlock some of the challenges that I was feeling about my own imposter syndrome. And they provided me with that safe space to do that. But like you say, we don't want to kind of like, you know,
we'll let him cut this out and use it for marketing for sure. Right. We'll be like, John, we're on a podcast, but we kept talking about you from this minute to this minute. It's all yours. Right. Yeah, of course. And that team is amazing. Yeah. Yeah. So tell us about you. Like, how can our listeners learn more about the results, figure out how to be their best selves, deal with so much practical, actionable steps? Oh, there it is. Yes, show us. There's the book.
Real pages with real words, like it's crazy, right?
Like it's, I love it. And so where should they go? To LinkedIn, a website? How can they find it? What should they do to seek you out?
So if you go on Amazon and search Results, The Art and Science of Getting It Done, you'll find the book. I know some people are buying it on Kindle. If it's possible, I would recommend you get a paper book, because people who are buying it on Kindle tend to then get the paperback so that they can make their notes on it. That's just a little tip there. You can also go to the website, which is results.partners. And if you go there, you'll find out much more information about the book and the resources that are available with it as well. And of course, you know, if you want to find me on social media or LinkedIn, all you have to do is just type in my name, Sayed Azadi, and you'll find me there. If you have any questions or anything, I'm available. Like, I don't want to just do this and then run away. For me, the key thing about this is you're not just reading it, but implementing on it. And if I'm able to help and support in any way, then I'm available as a resource to you.
I'm going to just put a little plug in, just like she did for Exchange, right where we paused. So by the way, when you get the book, because, you know, this is a no offer zone, like this is not about offers. We are honestly talking about a process. When you get the book, you get a little code, and there's a whole little training system behind it, isn't there? So I'm going to bring that up, because you're not allowed to, right? But I'm going there. Yeah. So, and I love this. Look at the smile, you guys. There's so much about being of service. Love language is being of service, our friend Sayeda. So of course, it's not just a book. Do you know what I mean? There's so much more to this. I highly encourage you to connect with her on LinkedIn. I really think listening to this multiple times, share this with whoever needs it, which honestly is everybody. Think about where you are settling. You know, look at your, I guess I'll call them the four I's: intention, identity, integrity, and implementation. And know that you matter, right? You advocate for yourself, but get really clear on what matters to you, because that's what rebooting your life is all about. And thank you for being on Control Alt Delete, Sayeda. It's an honor to know you and watch this journey and support your work. And I have learned so much today. I can't wait to unpack it myself too.
Thank you so much, Lisa. It's been a pleasure. It really has. And a real honor. Like, you just asked some really, really brilliant questions, and the conversation that I'm going to listen to this, because I want to know what I say.
Right. I know. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, everyone, have a great day. Take good care of yourself. Sayeda and I are rooting for you. We're both here if you need anything. All of the contact information will be in the show notes, and make it a great day. All right. Thanks, Sayeda.
Thank you. Bye.
That was great content, but let's be honest. If you don't get the support you need and start making changes in your life and work as a leader in tech, you can expect regret and burnout in the near future. Lisa can help you get kick-ass results at work without burning out, so you can be present for the moments that matter to you and your loved ones. Take your first step at rebootwithlisa.com.